This is David Griffith, editor of Police Magazine. As we approach the 20th anniversary of 9/11, police is conducting a series of special podcasts with law enforcement officers who experienced that horrible day in person. My guest for this podcast is Frank DeMasi. Frank is a retired NYPD officer who served with the Emergency Services Unit. On 9/11, Frank and other officers from the ESU, which is trained in both tactical operations and emergency medical response, were some of the first NYPD officers on the scene. In the first of two podcasts with Frank, we will discuss his experiences on 9/11. Frank, thank you for your time today.
No problem.
On 9/11, you responded in your ESU truck coming across the Williamsburg Bridge into Manhattan. What did you see as you approached the towers?
So as emergency service officers, we were called on to handle all the big catastrophes, plane crashes. I mean, it was even our guys that responded to that job in the Hudson when Sully landed that plane in the Hudson. But that day, driving over that bridge and just seeing that gaping hole was in the shape of the plane with smoke pouring out, we knew in our hearts that it was no accident. The hole was just too big to be a smaller plane. So we kind of knew just from looking at it that this was a big plane. It was a beautiful day. There wasn't a cloud in the sky. And there was just no way we were thinking driving over that bridge that this is an accident.
Well, there had been an accident with a high rise in New York City back in 1945 when a World War II bomber hit the Empire State Building. Were you thinking that when you were first responding?
It did cross our mind, and I did hear about that. I mean, I wasn't alive back then, but I do remember that. I don't know if it was a cloudy day or what kind of technology they had on the plane back then. But that day with a commercial jet, I driving over that bridge, I just wasn't buying it that it was an accident. And we kind of felt like something was going on.
What stands out from your memory of being on the scene that morning?
The biggest thing that I have to say, people ask me quite often what stands out the most. And it's got to be the poor people that were jumping that day. I mean, these poor people, what we were thinking in our minds is they were guilty of nothing but going to work that day. And I'm sure they were getting ready that morning and getting dressed, ready to go to work, and not thinking at all, in a couple of hours, I'll be jumping out of the 90th floor of the World Trade Center to release myself of the hell that was behind me. I'm sure none of them thought that. The other thing that stands out is in emergency service, we would well trained to handle any kind of catastrophe. And standing there and watching them, we all had a feeling of helplessness. We were so helpless that we wanted to get to them. We wanted to get up there and help them. But at the time, there was no way we can get to them. We did have officers that were in both towers trying to make their way up, guys that responded before I even got there. But it really breaks your heart when you're trained to do something and you're looking at these people and you want to go help them and you just can't. That's what sticks out the most in the whole day.
What law enforcement actions did you and the other ESU officers take that morning before the towers fell?
So when we arrived, I actually arrived to Lower Manhattan approximately 2 minutes before the second plane struck the tower. So I would say roughly right around 9 a.m. is when we got there. And I mean, driving over the bridge, we kind of knew that we were going to have, as soon as we got there, we were going to have, you know, they're going to see a police truck and you're going to have the walking wounded coming up to you. And sure enough, we did. I grabbed a medical bag and I remember just quickly patching up people. I remember So there were people with broken bones and broken arms, and you kind of just, you put a quick splint on them, and you would find somebody walking by, and you would push the wounded off to that person, and you would tell them, there's an ambulance down the block, take this person to an ambulance, or somebody bleeding from the head, and you'd wrap them up really quick and send them off to an ambulance. I mean, again, people were walking up to us bleeding and injured, and but we also knew that we needed to, at that point, we knew we needed to find an ESU supervisor, and we needed to regroup from what was going on. We needed to devise a plan, and eventually we needed to get into those towers.
So what kinds of orders were you receiving from your commanders at the scene that morning?
So when I left Brooklyn, there was a sergeant that we worked with that left 10 minutes ahead of us. He took an unloaded vehicle into Lower Manhattan, and I wanted to take a loaded vehicle with all of our equipment. So he was about 10 minutes ahead of us, but I promised him that when I got to Manhattan, I would try to raise him on the radio. So his name was Sergeant Gillis. He was one of the 23 police officers that got killed on September 11th. That was the first decision of the day that probably saved my life by not going with him. Because if I would have went with him, me and my partner, if we would have went with him to Manhattan, well, we would have definitely have been on his team, and we would have been in the towers and on the 23rd floor when the South Tower collapsed. So, and I didn't realize this until probably midnight that night, that that was a decision that I made not to go with Sergeant Gillis. And it was simply because of the fact that I wanted equipment. If it was any other thought in my head, I would have went with him. But it was just that if he had a loaded vehicle, I would have went with him. So I made him a promise when I got to Manhattan that I would try to raise him on the radio. And we had a TAC channel that, it doesn't go out to citywide. It only works within, let's say, a half a mile. So I got on the TAC channel and I tried raising him on the radio, and I wasn't getting a response, because what I think is he was probably already in the stairwell, and with all that concrete and steel, he wasn't hearing my transmission. And that's probably another thing that saved my life, because if he would have heard me, he would have might have said, Frank, I'm in stairwell C in the South Tower, climbing up the stairwell, get a bag of rope and meet me. And I would have went. So that's probably another reason that I'm here today, is because we didn't have radio communication. So I didn't raise any supervisors that were on the scene at that point. We were taking care of the people walking up to us. I knew eventually I had to make my way toward, I wanted to go toward West Street, which is the front of the World Trade Center. And I made a decision that the first ESU supervisor we come in contact with will be guided by what they say.
Can you describe what it was like for you down on the ground when the first tower fell?
It was literally hell on earth. There's no other way to describe it. So we were putting the finishing touches on our gear to go into the towers, and walking across West Street. So I was very close to the vicinity of the North Tower as we heard the South Tower start to come down. And I'll never forget what it sounded like. I mean, you're in, you got all those big buildings around you in Lower Manhattan, and they're like canyons in Lower Manhattan because of all these mountainous buildings that are around you. And when that tower started to come down, I mean, you first heard the twisting metal and just loud screeching. And when those floors, I mean, it came down in a pancake style. So one floor would fall on the other, would fall on the other. And as they were falling on top of each other, the bang was so loud. And again, just echoing through entire Lower Manhattan. And once we realized what we were listening to was the towers coming down, We turned and started to run back toward our emergency service truck, which is a really, our big truck is very big. It's probably the size of like a garbage truck, but it has a huge box on the back filled with equipment. So we started a run, and that the tower was down at that point. I think it took 7 or 8 seconds to fall. And then that debris cloud caught up to us, and we were able to dive under our emergency service truck. I would say there was at least 12 to 15 guys under that truck. And we were just consumed by that cloud. I remember my ears getting filled up, so you couldn't hear anything. It went dead silent. It was pitch black. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face. And that debris was just filling up your nose and filling up your throat. And I honestly thought, well, the towers are down. This is what's going through my mind. The tower came down. It didn't kill us, but we're going to suffocate to death under this truck. And that's truly what I thought.
Once both towers were down, what was your mission for the rest of the day?
So for the first month or so, our mission was always, we always had the hope of making rescues. And we always thought we would make a lot more than we actually did. While we were in, like I said, the first month, it was all about rescues. So within the first month, we would respond to what was known as the pile. We'd crawl inside any void. We were checking train stations. We were checking surrounding buildings and rooftops. So when we did go into voids, it was usually big enough for one person. So if one person did go into a void and there was, let's say, 15 cops standing there, I mean, you became that person's eyes and ears, because when you're going into a void, you got that tunnel vision and you're only looking at what's in front of you and you don't know what's going on around you. And I mean, you're the back of your head could be inches away from a shotting piece of metal, and that's your job. Your job is to protect the person that's going into that void. And yeah, that's what I remember as the first month went on. And then slowly that rescue operation became a recovery mission. Once we realized, you know, 3 weeks or a month is gone. And, you know, I know it's only a few days that a human can go without water. I know you can go longer without food, but unless they had access to water, I mean, after a few weeks, we kind of knew we were losing hope that anybody was going to be found alive anymore.
Thank you, Frank. Frank will talk about the aftermath of 9/11 in our next podcast.